Craft matters in small ways, like how coffee is made or how a wooden table is built piece by piece. And in not so small ways, like how your money is cared for. At UBS, we elevate investing to a craft. We deliver our services with passion, expertise, and meticulous attention to detail. This is what investing means to UBS. Not just work, but a craft. Discover more at ubs.com/craft. The value of investments may fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount originally invested.
Welcome to Podcast Deluxe. Your trophy is in the mail. A weekly cultural review. I'm John Caramonica. I'm a critic at the New York Times.
I'm Joe Coscarelli. I'm a reporter at the New York Times.
Before we get into the meat of the show, if you want to participate in the podcast ecosystem, I know we've talked about getting mugs. Here are the mugs. Podcast mug. It's on the Zazzle store. If you go to Zazzle, you type in podcast, you'll find it. Look at Joe. Joe, how's the drinkability on that?
I mean, it's a nice, it's
the tall mug. It's the right size.
It's the tall mug.
It's the right size. Yeah. Like, clearly, no 12s.
No short mugs.
No short mugs.
15 ounces or bust.
Absolutely. So we have these. Also, subscribe to Popcast if you want to check in with us every week. It's youtube.com/Popcast. You can press the button below. And the stickers, which I have stuck up in some of the finest bar bathrooms across this nation.
Other nations?
Not yet. But if you'd like to, if you want to volunteer, we'll send you some. It's the podcast.myshopify.com. Joe, did you watch the big award show the other night?
Yeah, congratulations.
To us.
Yes.
You maybe think I'm talking about the Oscars. I'm not talking about the Oscars. I'm talking about the iHeart Podcast Awards, which are a real thing.
Legit.
It's Shannon Sharp was there.
He showed up.
We didn't show up.
You pulled a Wes Anderson.
I didn't show up.
You pulled a Miyazaki, and you did not show up.
I do want to say, I did go back and look at the emails. They were threaded in such a way that it was like, I wasn't totally clear on like what the invitation status was.
Okay.
Anyway.
But you would have gone if you knew that the invitation was there.
I would have gone.
Okay.
Why not? One day in Austin? The optimal time to be in Austin, just for the record.
You think they would have put you on screen if you lost?
No. Having watched the live stream, I think no.
Okay. You weren't going to be Lily Gladstone.
No, I was not going to be Lily Gladstone. Anyway, shout out to iHeart and whoever. Who knows?
Best vote. Music podcast.
Best music podcast. Podcast. Here's the clip of us winning.
The guys from Workaholics.
Yes. Workaholics. Here's the clip of us winning.
Best music, podcast.
Clearly, obviously, the best music podcast of 2023
into 2024. I was told that directly after us was the award for best ad read.
We can only aspire to best ad read.
Next year. We're
coming for Smartlet. Anyway, if you're involved in that in any way, shouts to you. Maybe a trophy will show up. We'll put it up there if and when it shows up. Made me think a lot about the Oscars, obviously. It's our Oscars.
Whose speech do you think yours would have most closely resembled?
I cannot say on this show. I cannot speak on that. Okay. We don't want to spend too much time on the Oscars because it happened by the time you see this or hear this. It will have been many, many days. I do want to say, I never saw Oppenheimer.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry. All right. It's terrible take.
I have no love for Oppenheimer.
You saw
I'll
it.
Say that.
You I saw it.
Yes.
Okay.
I saw it on my birthday alone. Did I not say that on the podcast?
Dark.
I saw Oppenheimer on my birthday alone. Yeah.
I did. You want to just do a tight five on that?
It was like in between a haircut and a dinner. And I had
you had three hours to kill. Okay, you had 3 hours to kill. Okay, cool.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Robert Downey Jr. That you know how I know that that's a fake Oscar win?
Wow,
because Sam Rockwell still pronounced the character's name wrong in the little opening speech. I'm like, this role did not hit like you're pretending it hit. If we don't know that it's Strauss and not Strauss,
fair. Okay. Anything else happened at the show that jumped out at you besides the I'm Just Kent performance?
I want to talk about that.
Yeah. You're welcome.
My real takeaway was Billie Eilish 2, Martin Scorsese 1.
Yeah, of course.
That's like career Oscars.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable.
I got to say, like, this is maybe not the right episode to talk about this, but I was thinking a lot about the Grammys recently and the Jay-Z speech. Like, it just was, it's been like percolating in my mind. And, you know, yes, we want the numbers to be right. The statistics, we want it to be balanced. Like, Beyonce has great albums. She should win Album of the Year.
Sure.
You know who else has a lot of Grammy wins who's never won Album of the Year? Jimmy Sturr.
Great.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
Right. Like, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't, like, the saying. Numbers, like, yes, Billie Eilish has two Oscars.
I want to thank my best friend Zoe for playing Barbies with me growing up and being by my side forever. I want to thank my, like, dance teachers growing up. I want to thank my choir teachers. Miss Brigham, thanks for believing in me. Miss T, you didn't like me, but you were good at your job.
Diane Warren, though, robbed 15 times straight.
Okay, put a finger down if you were aware that there was a Flamin' Hot Cheetos movie in this past year. Put another finger down if you know Diane Warren wrote a song for it. Put another finger down if you've listened to any of the oeuvre of Becky G. Put another finger down if you understood why Becky G was performing the Diane Warren song from the Flamin' Hot Cheetos movie at the Oscars.
Okay, I knew there was a movie. It's based on a semi-apocryphal story that was debunked in a great LA Times story. Incredible.
I'll just say this.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Half.
Becky G performed at the Oscars.
Salute.
I also want to...
It's the ultimate making fetch happen.
Yes. Becky G... semi-failed Dr. Luke protege made it to the Oscars. I did want to shout out, there was a great little nugget in Matthew Bologna's Puck newsletter.
Yeah.
Podcaster, Hollywood insider extraordinaire, said that Diane Warren threw a mini tantrum because the nominees were not read in full, meaning her name did not get said.
Yes. But she's been nominated, I think, is 15 times.
She's 0 for 15.
Right. Yeah. Some real Susan Lucci hours.
Yeah.
You know, I got to be honest. There's probably a Diane Warren song in the first five of those that probably should have won.
Yeah, sure.
But these are fake songs.
Yeah. These are not real. These only exist to try to get her the trophy.
Yeah. These songs are the Tony Bennett and Lady Gaga collaborations, which only exist to receive Grammy nominations of the Oscars.
But that's even giving them too much credit, I think.
Yeah, no,
but I do sort of respect that the voting body, like, they're not just being like, okay, fine, stop doing this.
Okay.
Like, usually, like, they do give career awards, right? Like, eventually they're like, this person just deserves one. But they're like, nope, they can't bring themselves to vote for the Flamin' Hot Cheetos song.
Do you think, okay, does that song predate the existence of the Flamin' Hot Cheetos movie? Or did Diane Warren sit in a screening room, take in the power of the Flamin' Hot Cheetos movie, and immediately run to a piano?
Right, like Billy did about the doll.
Exactly. Yeah, like, what was it? What's the creative process there?
I bet you the germ of the idea was there, and she was like she must have a crazy, like, searchable database,
like, where, hot.
Yeah, where you
flame.
Yeah, where you can go by keyword, which we're going to actually... I want to talk more about this idea of filler music in a future episode. So put a pin in this.
Will do.
Because it's irrelevant to something else we're going to discuss on the show.
Okay.
The other takeaway from me, which Al Pacino had to put out a statement today.
It's ridiculous.
Because he too did not read the full slate of nominees.
He also said, like, my eyes see Oppenheimer. Like, what does that mean? Like, you went to the movies? Like, you went to the Regal 14?
It was
like,
it was great anticlimax, especially because everyone already knew what was going to win.
Yeah.
But Al Pacino, father of a new child, he's probably tired.
What would you agree with that?
Yeah,
it's fair.
I mean, he's the one Jimmy Kimmel joke that I liked all night was like, glad he could get a sitter, which sort of like went under the radar.
I didn't, I almost didn't catch that.
Yeah.
I guess before we're done with Oscars, shout out friend of the pod, Cord, Oscar winner. Very also weird to be at a stage in our lives and careers where we just know people who've won Oscars.
2 years running?
Yeah. Now, was it last year or 2 years ago?
Okay.
Joe was 2 years ago. Yeah. Joe, shout out Joey, my dear friend, won an Oscar 2 years ago. We just know Oscar winners, Pulitzer winners, iHeart Podcast Award winners. It's a start.
I'm just Ken. I'm just Ken. Where I see love, she sees a friend. What will it take for her to see the man? You're a big Ken guy.
Yeah, very much so. I was extremely happy to see it. I thought...
He sold it.
He really sold it. I thought Ronson looked great. Like, whatever the... pirate shirt action
playing bass,
yeah, like phenomenal.
I do want to try that move with the little like to you sometime, like just the when he did the little like playful,
a little nudge
and a little Gosling shit. Did the, you know,
yeah. Like,
I wonder how many times they practice that.
Gosling obviously really went in his Mickey Mouse Club bag.
Yeah,
like if you think of those Mickey Mouse Club performances, they're actually fairly earnest, and I wonder like the campiness of it. Obviously, the movie is camp, whatever, but. I feel like he was trying to play it relatively straight, even compared to the movie performance of it.
Yeah.
It was advertised that there'd be 75 shirtless Kens. I guess I was too hot for ABC.
Because they had like little tug situation.
So it didn't add up to that. But I thought it was a meaningful performance.
You're saying that it was oversold.
Yes.
Not as hot as advertised.
But don't you feel like... For at least three or four commercial breaks leading up to it, they were like, and now Ryan Gosling.
Yeah.
Like,
it was
the like,
centerpeace of the show.
Absolutely. I mean, more than the Flamin' Hot Cheetos song.
Yeah.
Yeah. To me, sincerity, even Slash kept a straight face.
Yeah.
Really impressive.
Yeah.
All around.
Slash's leather is fitting well still. Like, how often do you think he re-ups the...
First of all... I know Slash is pulling up to H. Lorenzo. I know he's pulling up to Maxfield.
I really teed you up for that.
Yeah, I know. Like, you know, like, first of all, Slash, come shop with me. Like, or let me come shop with you. Like, he's absolutely pulling up to the most preposterous, expensive stores in Los Angeles.
You think he's with Buzz Bissinger? And they're just, like, trying on
leather pants. Like, leather pants with, like, hoops on the side. Yeah, seriously. Slash, incredible. You know, I double checked the ninth best song of 2023.
Should have won the Oscar.
Absolutely, like no knock on Billy. It's a nice song. It's good. It's sturdy. I'm Just Ken is an achievement in every way that the Billy song is not.
It will also be remembered, which is like actually usually you win Oscars when your thing won't be remembered. You know, it's like it's better to lose. Probably.
Yeah. Anyhow.
Did the Oscars, this is my last question, then we can move on. Did the Oscars make you want to watch any of the films you haven't seen? Which I assume is most of them.
Yeah.
You Anatomy of a Fall guy?
Yeah, saw it.
Okay, great.
You want to do 10 on Messi? Unbelievable. No, I really liked Anatomy of a Fall. I have no interest in Oppenheimer. Poor Things?
Mm-hmm.
Nah, I'm good.
I think you might like it. I think you might respect it. Beautiful gowns.
Also, the Emma Stone. Was it you who sent me the Emma Stone beating Lily Gladstone tweet?
Which one? There was a lot.
Yeah, the sort of in the year of the curse.
There's nothing. Is a documentary. Yeah, that was a common sentiment.
There's nothing funnier than Emma Stone beating Lily Gladstone. Yeah, anyway,
it's rough. Lily Gladstone will be back. I'm just gonna say that now.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
100%. Anyway. That's our turn with the Oscars. Let's go talk about something that's a little more familiar.
Okay.
Joe, some might say that we are podcast industry plants.
I know where you're going with
this. Yeah. What do you make of the industry plant conversation in 2024? Forget who we're about to talk about. Why are people still talking about this?
Do you want my serious answer? Because I have a serious answer.
I want a serious answer.
I think there is something to the industry plant conversation, but it is not what people think it is.
Okay.
If there were such a thing as an industry plant, as in labels could just decide who was going to be super famous and seed a path through culture in which fire caught gradually and then... erupted
into like unanimous acclaim,
there would be so many more successful artists. Like they can't even get artists to work that
to do the thing,
right? Yeah, like that
have
like,
actual fan bases.
Yeah, like yeah, like Justin Timberlake. Like, you know, if there were such a thing as an industry plan, if it was possible to do such a thing in that way, in this top down way, like from the major labels yeah. who are like pulling mysterious strings, Wizard of Ozing behind the scenes, like we would have a new artist breaking every week, every month. Like they, many, many dozens of people's jobs are to try to make this happen. That said, I think what people actually mean about an industry plant, which does exist, is somebody who has a lot of people in their corner who know a lot of other people whose names you don't know who can pull certain levers.
But is that a what is
so
that?
This is what I'm saying. That is something different.
Being well connected.
Being well connected. There is a difference between, say, an artist in Omaha, Nebraska, uploading something to Bandcamp and catching viral lightning completely organically. Their manager is their best friend.
Yeah.
They get flown to LA. They go to some meetings. They sign a label deal. Maybe they don't announce a label deal until after the next EP is out, which is something that happens
yes.
to make it look more organic. Like mm-hmm. that's a fairly rare rise. Mm-hmm. And then there's someone like Forbats. That's who we're talking about.
Yeah.
Forbats' manager has worked at a label. Forbats' manager has done creative direction for other clients. That person likely knows people who make playlists at streaming services, people who direct music videos, having a Rolodex. But that doesn't mean that your songs are going to hit. Again, there's tons of artists like that. You know what I mean?
And absolutely.
And not all those artists hit. So like when you see an artist like Forbats getting popular and then getting a Drake remix, like we've seen this game play out before. Mm-hmm. Like they might be connected, but that doesn't necessarily mean the music is going to succeed, especially in the way that this music is succeeding. So
yeah.
I think like people are onto something, but the conspiracies that they're spinning up in their heads, both, you know, the online commentary and fans who like smell something fishy, like they're not wrong. There is smoke, but it's not what they think it is.
Should we listen to the good Forbat song, as it were? There's three Forbat songs.
Yeah, which act do you prefer?
Okay, I mean, I think act two is the one we have to talk about.
Sure, day to
so
day.
It's act two, day to day. This is the original version. So I bought you another pair. Girl, I got you another dress. So bring your ass up down the stairs. So I think that you are correct in both tiers of that assessment, but what always frustrates me about this conversation is by and large it is triggered and pushed by people who have very little understanding of how
yes.
the music industry works, to the point where it has rinsed that phrase of any potential meaning.
Yeah,
it didn't mean anything to start with, but it absolutely doesn't mean anything when it's used and weaponized and kind of decontextualized by a bunch of people who genuinely don't understand how anything works in the music business.
Right.
So you're correct. There is a difference between artists that generate random viral fame or random online attention and people who come through a well-known publicity company or marketing firm or TikTok seeding
or
firm
the
or whatever.
Of all of these yeah, things.
Yeah. Like there are artists who have no manager but have a lawyer, and that lawyer is well connected, and that lawyer walks them into a record label office. It's also possible, and I haven't done the full Forbats deep dive, but it's possible that there's some songs that person put on the internet 5 years ago
almost
that have been
definitely.
Scrubbed. That have been totally scrubbed now. So he seems like a totally new artist, but probably is not a totally new artist.
And that's really common. And I think the Forbats sound and rollout and look, you know, all of it. And the reason Drake is drawn to it is because Drake has very consistent taste over the years. Like you sure. can see the pieces of this that Drake and OVO were drawn to because it is both
sounds
a playbook.
Like the, yeah, it sounds like the Weeknd.
Yeah, it's a playbook that they've participated in
yeah.
and a playbook that they've boosted
yeah.
many other times, whether it's Bryson Tiller or The Weeknd mm-hmm. or Party Next Door or Magic Jordan or,
yeah.
you know, it's like mm-hmm. all of these things, the look, the feel, the sound, all of it. It's like it's in the wheelhouse and there is a path for things that look and sound like this. So it doesn't surprise me that this song took off or that Drake jumped on a remix. What did I do to deserve you?
don't even know what I did. Been praying on this since a kid. I guess it's just luck if you say so. How you get all of that body and face though? What kind of water they serving in clay cold? Listen to me talking, it's not DNA ho. Ready to pop out, but we gotta lay low. I really gotta calm down before I end up in jeopardy, just like the game show. Broski, my twin, that's my bestie.
And also, I mean, I don't know if it's an A-plus song. At minimum, I think it's a B-plus song. It's solid. It has what ultimately is a funny visual conceit in the video, which is it's a video of a bunch of guys looking tough. And then the vocals come and the vocals are not tough, or maybe they're tough, but just not in a way that lines up with the visuals.
Right. A big four from the block performance helps boost it. Is that the video you're talking about?
Yeah. And so, but the subject matter is not that unusual. Like the sound is not that unusual. It's just always strange to find people confused and reckoning with the sudden arrival of a new thing that does well, as if new things don't suddenly arrive every day, every week. Of course, not many with the lasting power or the potential for lasting power that this seems to have. It must be hard for an artist who has opportunity but also has talent to immediately be received with this kind of, like, you got placed here, as if, I mean, what is it, 80 million streams on Spotify? I mean,
sure,
maybe there's a streaming farm somewhere in Southeast Asia that's buying those streams, but I don't think so.
Yeah, it
seems legit enough.
And there are songs that take off with no plan in place, and there are songs that take off as part of a plan.
Yes.
And I think, like, that's the other thing. It's like, often the people cooking up the plans have some experience and connections in the industry, and there's a 3-week, 3-month, 3-year blueprint of how this is all going to go. And then sometimes there's things that happen along the way, like a FaceTime from Kanye or a Drake remix, and then an EP deal with OVO Sound. Like, again, this is a tried and true path for a decade now. So it is funny that people still seem to get outraged by it, and also outraged by the idea that, like, Forbats is trying to capitalize on the attention.
Should be immediately
capitalized.
Like, yeah, it's like, what else are you supposed to
do? Yeah, it's hip-hop, it's R&B. It's like, he wants to be as big as possible pretty quickly, but while also taking his time and not blowing his mystique. Like, that's what this is, pop music.
I mean, the other thing, and this is less from the fan, quote-unquote, side, or the chattering class side, and more from the industry side, it really does feel like a counterpoint to the rank desperation that I think we feel from a lot of artists about how to navigate the TikTok era. And we've talked about this a bunch of times, certainly in recent episodes, we've talked about this a bunch of times, where people are like, my label's telling me I have to game the system. And it's like, yes, your label's telling you that. It's also your label's job to help you game the system. Everybody is trying to either organically or inorganically achieve what a song like this has achieved. And so I think that level of desperation that's common amongst rookies and veterans, something like this happens and people are like, literally, WTF. Like, how sway?
It's like the Watergate era, like, of music fandom, where after Watergate, the American public is paranoid and open to conspiracy theories and, you know, sort of like looking over their shoulder, who's lying to us? Like, music fans are so attuned now to the lever pulling and and they game the system themselves, stand on behalf of their artists. Fine. Like, they
like
know
Jennifer
too
Lopez
much.
Vinyl buyer?
Yeah. They know too much. And I think that they're on high alert in this age of misinformation across all realms of culture and politics.
Rather than simply being like, this song sounds like a lot of other songs that I and millions of others have historically liked. And boy, someone really did a good job of nailing that sound.
Right.
We regret to inform you, Forbats is not an industry plant.
Is that where you're coming down?
I just, yes, that is where I'm coming down. Are you coming down on the other side of it?
No, I'm saying Forbats has an industry plan.
Plan T.
plan.
Plan T. That plan is called Plan T.
Yeah.
Okay, speaking of someone who maybe doesn't have quite as tight a rollout as Forbats.
Right, a quite messy rollout.
Yeah. Really,
if you go back 6 months.
Yeah, so the Ariana album is out.
Ariana Grande.
Yeah, it's called Eternal Sunshine.
You like that movie?
I saw it when it came out. Yeah, it's a good movie.
Big for me as a teenager.
Was it?
I'm the right age for
it. Yeah, maybe Sunshine. I was a little bit too at the time.
I think I noted this when the single Yes And came out, but a lot of the younger fans were like, this is a movie starring Jim Carrey and Kate Winslet, you know, just like
sending Wikipedia links around.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, and I'm like, yeah, I can like recite it like front to back, you know?
I don't know if it was that important for me.
Right.
But I think sure.
Yeah, well, you were at a different stage in your life for a Michelle Gondry film.
Okay, so this is basically like an early to mid 90s club record or club soul record. Ariana, Yes And was the lead single. There's a Mariah Carey remix of that, which, you know, kudos to all people involved. Ariana was also the Oscars. We didn't talk about this during the Oscars segment. Ariana was also the Oscars with Cynthia Erivo.
Doing low-key promo going to be the most promoted film of all time.
I'm already tense about the Wicked rollout.
You like Wicked? You saw Wicked?
I haven't seen Wicked.
Okay. I'm surprised. You should go see Wicked.
Is it dope?
I don't like musicals, but I was moved by the...
I like Phantom of the Opera.
Okay. You like The Wizard of Oz?
Not really.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is, this is
The
Wizard of Oz.
Great.
Told through.
The Wizard?
No, it's in the title. Did you really not know this?
No, I have no idea what it is.
All right.
Yeah. Okay. Sounds...
The Good Witch, The Wicked Witch.
Great. Sounds unappealing.
There's some bangers, though.
If you say so.
Yeah. Correct. There's
Diane Warren.
You've never heard Defying Gravity?
It's time to try Defying Gravity.
Yeah, is that what that's from?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
Phenomenal. I'll see you at the theater.
Yeah, it's a theater. See you at
both theaters.
Yes.
We're going to do a double feature stage show,
then film.
Film, yeah.
Dark. Should we make that a podcast really group dark. Event? That'd be a fan event, fan exclusive. Yeah. Where are you sitting on the Ariana rollout? We'll talk about the music more, but like on the rollout.
So she had some tabloid mess, we'll say. Relationship-based, divorced.
Ethan Slater, who stars in Wicked also.
Yeah, and formerly SpongeBob SquarePants.
Is that true?
Yeah, he was SpongeBob on Broadway.
Oh.
Yeah, that's her new boyfriend. She got divorced, ended up with a co-star.
Right.
This album seems to be about... So, Eternal Sunshine, for those who were not 16 in 2004.
Or 30.
Or 30. is about wiping the memory of a scarring relationship, and whether you want to or not. A little fantastical. Yeah.
So it's like Men in Black.
Yeah, it is like Men in Black.
Yeah, it's okay.
It is like
speak a language I can understand.
Yeah. And this is about wiping one damaging relationship and finding a new one, this album. But there is a song in which she seems to refer to her brief marriage as a situationship.
I'm sure. Do you think he's aware of that?
I think he knows now since the album came out. So it's pretty directly, as a lot of the most recent Ariana Grande albums are, responding directly to her tabloid narratives. You know, there's the line in Yes And, why do you care? Bleep, 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 bleep.
Also, can I just add that on a regular podcast this week, the subject is about main pop girl, like the idea of main pop girl. And one of the things that came up in that conversation with Larisha and Jason was you have to have, obviously you have to have the songs, you have to have the promotion and the rollout and the marketing, but you have to have the meta narrative.
Yes.
And it's not simply a fan meta narrative is what fans are imposing on you. It's also you're feeding into meta narrative. And yep. I think Ariana, maybe as not as much as Taylor, because no one is as much as Taylor, but approaching the level of Taylor, really takes that seriously and has taken it seriously, especially for someone whose primary value proposition as a pop star to me is not mess, but it's actually vocals.
Yeah.
Like
which
that's
this
what
album
best
is
at.
Not showcasing.
No. No, not at all. But it's striking that for someone who I think is so fundamentally vocally gifted, there is this sense of like, that's not enough. I'm going to do autobiographical songs. I'm going to do songs that stoke tabloid interest, that stoke fan theories. That's still very much where her head's at, even though she could absolutely blow out of the water 99% of people who are currently singing in pop.
But I think since Thank You Next, when she really leaned into this yep. and also leaned into a quicker rollout cycle, yes. like
rappers.
Yeah. Rap style, which like she hasn't totally stuck with, mm-hmm. but you know, she could hit us with another one.
Yeah. And also
soon.
This album is 36 minutes
long. That's what
long.
I mean. She's yeah. fine doing this project is a little slight. And I mean that as a compliment.
Yes.
Like it's barely 36 minutes long. It has one sound largely written and produced with Max Martin mm-hmm. and Ilya, his collaborator, longtime mm-hmm. people who've worked together.
Feels like it was made in like 2 weeks.
Yeah, but in a way that I think is
again,
cool
I don't
for
mean it as a negative.
A big yeah. pop album. And so I think the rollout is actually effective for this version of her. There aren't huge songs on here. Like, yeah, sure, Yes And went number one with a Mariah Carey remix. Like, they were going to make that happen. Yes And feels a little out of place on this album. Like, this feels like a pretty small and intimate album, and the lyrics are pretty literal to match that. Like, she's talking about therapy. She's talking about, you know, her grandma's featured on the last track with yep. a voicemail. Like, another rappery thing.
Come home and I'd see him and the physical gets off that train. It was like God Almighty arrived.
It does feel like she's both big main pop girl and really just communing with her fans and is like, I'm just going to keep feeding you because you're bought into my narrative.
You know, I mean, also she has a huge movie coming. It's what can I do to sort of.
Yeah, it does feel like a holdover.
It feels like an album that's a promotional tactic for her upcoming star turn in the movie.
Yes.
But to your point about it being slight, I mean, there are a couple things I like about this album. One, it's small sounding, but it's an interesting sound.
Sure.
I wish I could hear more of her singing. I mean, the thing with Ariana is I really like her
as a belter.
I like the contour of her voice. I like the nimbleness of it. I like the swoop of it. And there's not very much on these songs that really goes to that. She's in a position where I don't know. Maybe there's this thing where I did that to announce myself and now I don't have to do it anymore, especially if I'm not going to do like Adele style ballads. She still wants radio or radio oriented songs. And maybe she thinks that you have to shrink your voice a little bit because there isn't a current template for a big singer to have pop hits.
There's barely any ballads on this album.
There's slower songs, mid-tempo. But like not really nothing. There's no theatricality on this record.
Wicked's coming up.
Yeah.
So maybe she's getting that out of her system elsewhere.
But also, one of the things that we've talked about, and we talked about this with Dua a lot, where it's like, oh, like, is dance music back? Like, Beyonce's Renaissance, like, is dance music back? And one thing about both Dua and Beyonce in this particular setting is like, or in relation to this, Dua's doing, you know, late 70s and 80s cosplay. Beyonce is doing like a historical updating of certain kinds, whether it's disco or queer subcultures from the 90s.
House.
Yeah. They feel more specifically indebted and like bound by an older style. These are very clearly like club soul records, but they don't feel historical mm-hmm. in quite the same way. I don't know that they feel totally modern, but there's something a little bit strenuous about when Dua and Beyonce are doing it, obviously at two different skill levels, just in case anybody's worried that I'm confusing those two, at two different skill levels, but there's
Houdini,
nothing.
Houdini is better than Renaissance is what you're saying.
Said that. Camera on him.
Just kidding. But
Ariana doesn't, These aren't intellectual records.
They're Max Martin records.
Yeah. They just happen to have that particular framework.
Like, he has such an ease with anything. He's like, which folder do you want today? You know, well, it's like,
you
want
to talk about the Robin folder?
Yeah, we got to talk about the Robin folder.
Okay. So Joe watched me in real time experience this song for the first time.
We can't be friends.
Okay, should we just do the TikTok guy thing where we play that song and then play the Robin songs?
Yeah, you want to do Call Your Girlfriend and Dancing on My Own?
Yeah.
This is like a mashup of the two. So an AI cover of a mashup of the two Robin songs?
Absolutely. So like, we'll just do like this. And then we'll do this.
The meta joke here, if there is one, is like Max Martin responsible for the early part of Robin's career.
Mm-hmm.
Show Me Love.
Very much from the era that Ariana's drawing from.
Yeah, here. The proto Britney, pre Backstreet Boys, Max Martin hits. And then Robin becomes whatever she is now, cult figure Robin.
Garen Gans, Ganscore.
Yeah, Body Talk.
Yeah.
These songs, which are now, you know, like
they're class. I mean, you know, they're classics.
Don't Stop Believing.
They're
millennials.
Yeah. Yeah. The stuff of Girls season 2 finale.
Sure. The Curse.
And The Curse.
Like they're so part of the culture that they can be satirized in The Curse with Emma Stone and Nathan Fielder.
Yes.
Anyway, this is just like a bald ripoff, like just beyond.
It's actually like way, to me, it's way crazier than just sampling, like than straight sampling. Because I feel like in this era, there's just so, obviously there's so much literalism.
Yeah.
This is actually way crazier because it is so clearly a ripoff and yet it is not a sample.
And yeah, they're not in the credits, not yet. Like Robin and her collaborators,
but like,
not
in the credits. Who are the credits? The credits are Max Martin anyway.
No, but he didn't do those later Robin records.
So
I can do that. Yeah. He's like, oh, you left me? Like, watch.
It's Craven. It's really Craven.
And it's a single.
And it's good.
You like it?
Yeah, I like it.
You like Call Your Girlfriend? It's past like or dislike.
Yeah, it's in its moment. I didn't love it, but
yeah.
I like this. I'm very struck at like why Ariana thinks this is a path for her. She and Robin, two totally different singers.
Yeah.
Totally different styles, totally different aesthetics. But it makes me wonder, does Ariana think for the next phase of her music career that she has to, like I said, rein in the belting, rein in the extremely like overt references to like
Pete Davidson.
I was gonna say the black soul music of the 70s and the 90s, but sure, Pete Davidson. Does she feel like that path is not a viable path forward for her? And therefore choosing to do this, even though a lot of the music on this record, it's like a smaller version of that. Like the club music in the 90s is different, but like you can imagine an early 90s referent Ariana album that refers to Mariah's first album.
Right.
It is huge and has runs and is peppy and dancey, but also dynamic vocally.
There is a song here called The Boy Is Mine.
Literally,
which is not The Boy Is Mine.
No, but. And if you're the person who I gave the free idea to about Boy Is Mine, I just want you to know we're waiting on that. Do you know who you are? Why does this album exist? Do you think it exists purely to set the table for Wicked?
Yeah, and I think Ariana loves to be in the studio, like a rapper. You know what I mean? I think she creates because she wants to create and she loves her collaborators.
Like us.
And if you have Max Martin on speed dial, like, you know, why not? Like, just bang one out. And I do think there's some interesting stuff on here. Like, these songs are stuck in my head. There's one song late on the record. I think it's the second to last one, Imperfect for You, which is based around like a weird guitar sample. Yep. Like, she's trying some stuff. Mm-hmm. There's a strange little run in the chorus there. There's some slightly unexpected stuff, and I like this album much better than a lot of the like event records that we've gotten in recent history from people at her level.
Yeah, I mean, I think what she is realizing is that the existence of an Ariana Grande record is sufficient event. And a lot of our, you know, again, we were talking about Dua before, this kind of heavy, like, you know, what is the thing from the whiteboard with the red strings, yeah, and whatever, like, yeah, that kind of rollout. Yeah. And this has, it's a little messy, it's a little unconventional, but it's mostly just, I know you guys have missed me. I mean, she really went dark,
yes,
for like the 12 to 18 months.
For the 4 years they've been filming with.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, she really went dark. So just the reemergence is sufficient.
I dare to say, like, they're successful in different and not in different ways, but it's a little Midnights-esque.
How
so? Stage of her career.
How so?
I think Midnights became something bigger because of the tour and everything that happened after, mm-hmm, the Grammy, which is basically a thank you for the success of the tour. Mm-hmm. But I think in and of itself, Midnights was like a little bit of an in-betweener. It was made from seemingly like a little bit of spare parts. It was like a familiar sound with a go-to collaborator. It didn't feel like it was trying to be an event. It became an event by virtue of who put it out.
Okay, that's fair. Although I will say there is a coherence sonically to this record that Midnights to me doesn't have. And I feel like, and I want to stop using the phrase eras for any person,
yeah,
including Taylor.
It's spent.
But
it's burnt.
It's rinsed. Don't do it.
It's industry plant.
It really is. Yeah. Like that actually, you want to know a thing that the industry has planted? It's the idea that artists should have eras, yeah, and do have eras. But to me, it feels reminiscent of a time period where people would say, I'm going to try to make a smallish record in this style. And maybe it hits, maybe it doesn't. But if it doesn't quite work, no problem, because next year I'm going to do another smallish to midsize record in a slightly different style.
Yeah.
Except Ariana is very famous and de facto, I mean, this is a number one album, or will be a number one album. I forget when this comes out, but
in a fairly quiet,
yeah,
time.
Right. But it'll be a number one album. And she's in a position where small songs can end up as big hits.
Right.
But they don't go in the studio and say, give me five bangers.
Yeah.
And that is, frankly, a relief. One thing that, as I mentioned, doesn't quite hit for me on this is, like, I want to hear vocals. And I do think one thing that pop stars right now are really struggling with in this narrative and meta-narrative age is, like, what am I good at? What do people know me for? How much do I want to play into that? How much do I want to push back? How much do I want to challenge people?
Am I leaning in or am I undermining,
right,
ideas, exactly, about myself?
And also, like, am I getting out over my skis in any way?
Right.
And I was thinking a lot about that idea when I saw the Olivia tour. Can we talk about the Olivia tour?
Yeah, Olivia Rodrigo, back out here.
I did.
With the Breeders.
Yeah, not yet.
Right.
But yeah, with Chapel Roan, which somehow funnier than the Breeders in a way.
Did you see Chapel Roan?
Did see Chapel Roan.
She's got songs.
She does have songs.
And presence.
She does have presence. I think she left a lot of people in the crowd confused.
I think that's what she's there,
yeah,
for.
Yeah, I think it's very strange. She said, the way I took the Chapel Roan opening performance is, she said all the things Olivia can't.
I was going to say, it's a little rated R for, yes, some of the...
A lot rated R. A lot rated R. No, she...
Olivia's still PG-13, no matter how much she says the F word.
And that is the thing, right, because she says the F word like a 13-year-old, yeah, would say. yeah. As I was watching the show, so I went to opening night in Palm Desert, California.
Didn't know they had shows there.
They do. It's at an arena that is home to the Coachella Valley Firebirds, which I looked up.
Incredible.
Hockey team. Do you know they play hockey in Palm Desert?
As a childhood fan of the Orlando Solar Bears, I love some off-brand
still,
hockey.
Still going to show up in a Solar Bears jersey one of these days.
Everyone should watch Shorzy also.
What's that? Oh, that. No, yes. I never watched it, actually.
It's incredibly funny.
Okay, yeah, I'll watch that. Okay, so a couple things. Fan cosplay.
Okay.
Full effect.
Docs,
fishnets, like short to medium length skirts, tank tops, like absolutely like a color palette that is resonant from the Sour album, mostly everybody dressed up. Shout out also Callie and Styles, who was out there covering stuff for how the fans were sure. interacting.
Girls to the front.
And also me.
Yeah.
this is strange to say, but there was a couple with a daughter directly in front of us who were having like the absolute time of their lives. And the guy kept going on live and he had crazy followers. And it turned out to be, I think, the former frontman of something corporate.
Wow.
Yeah.
Andrew. Damn, I wish I could pull this.
Andrew McMahon.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
Good, you were close.
I mean, I've seen him light his piano on fire many times.
Wow. Well, I'm pretty sure it was him in front of us going on live and having a far... I mean, I had a great time.
Incredible.
Having like a 10x time
right.
over what I was doing.
Amazing. So
anyway, shout out to Andrew.
I bet you and Olivia Rodrigo daughter. Rocks with some something corporate stuff.
I'm sure.
From
I mean,
Dan
literally...
Nigro. I'm sure Dan Nigro played shows with something corporate.
I also haven't... I hadn't listened to something corporate in a really long time. And once I kind of like put it all together, like I went back and listened, and I was like, oh, this is like Rodrigo, like absolute
Constantine.
Rodrigo Corp.
Yeah. I
100%.
Mean, huge record.
I don't understand all the things you've seen, but I'm slipping in between you and your big.
Okay. But watching the show, I kept thinking Olivia is being so careful about the new things that she's trying that don't disrupt or distract from the things that she's exceptional at. This is not like, unlike the first tour, I did the first tour as well, much more piano time I felt at the first tour than at the second tour. Here, you know, she's walking out. There's like two.
Oh, there's like a catwalk.
Yeah, like two tentacles like on either side. She's walking out. She's singing at the end. There's dance routines.
Right.
Like she's doing sort of routines. Like,
like full choreo?
There is full choreo. She's maybe doing 2/3 the level of the backup dancers. Okay. 1/2 of the time.
Right.
Because she's not doing like
Sour Tour was so streamlined.
Yes.
She had to do covers because she didn't have enough
songs.
Didn't have
enough songs.
Yeah.
But I was thinking a lot about that choice. And can you imagine if you went to the Olivia Rodrigo tour in 2024 and she did a full showbiz?
Right.
It wouldn't feel right. So she's taking these kind of tentative steps and actually weirdly reminded me of Ariana's arena tour from a roughly similar time in her career. Mm-hmm. Although I will say, like, Ariana having like dancey hits at that time and not dancing did not feel like I don't want to get out of my skis as much as I don't do this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, I reluctantly made dance hits and like I wish to not be held accountable for them.
Right.
Whereas Olivia was sort of like, how can I relatably like be a person who does an arena show, is dancing, but is not dancing to a point where it puts anybody off. Frankly, very Taylor-ish.
I was going to say,
we're just only,
you know, like the, you gotta, like it's, you gotta say it.
Yeah.
Like she,
it's a
she became that.
Yes. And I think we'll continue to, but I thought it was very, very smart. I really enjoyed the show, but I thought it was an incredibly smart way to inch towards something bigger without overwhelming either the fan base who still is kind of living lightly in the past or yourself and thinking like, I've got to become a totally different person. The thing that you learn from the album is she senses what the pitfalls of becoming bigger are personally and also structurally. It's notable that she chose a structure for this tour that is bigger in terms of scale and ambition, but doesn't push her in ways where she becomes uncomfortable.
Right.
That to me was the most striking thing.
But why can't Olivia just stay at the front person of a band? Like, why can't she just be Alanis instead of becoming someone who does choreography?
I'm not convinced that that's not available to her. It does seem like this felt like a trial balloon right. for something. I'm also with a mindset that we don't know what the next Olivia album is going to be. Like, right. it's funny, like, we've talked about this album as, like, the rock album, and it's, like, a third to a half that. But, frankly, Olivia hasn't made Alanis songs. She's made songs that gesture to that.
Sure.
But in terms of, like, the rawness of it, even her most kind of, like, I'm rocking out songs.
Right. She's not Janis Joplin.
No, they're controlled. They're tightly. They have boundaries. She hasn't totally gone rogue. And maybe if she goes rogue and goes big, goes rogue vocally, I should say, and goes big, then maybe she can do the thing that you're describing. But I do think fundamentally what Olivia Rodrigo would like to be is a big pop star, but on different terms than the pop stars that she clearly admires. But she wants to bring a different set of reference points to it.
Do you think there will be beats on the next Olivia Rodrigo album?
Regrettably, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, I don't think that that's optimal Olivia Rodrigo. I don't think it'll be canon.
But you think it's inevitable?
Don't you?
I don't know. I think she could continue going in the other direction.
I don't know.
I didn't see the show yet, though.
Yeah, so no, I think right now, as we speak, Nigro is like fiddling around with some Phineas type stuff.
Okay.
And just to see.
He's got his sound wave in the studio.
Yeah, I kind of feel like that's, they're going to at least toy with it.
Okay.
I also went to see Zach Bryan.
Sure.
In Chicago.
Will there be week. Beats on the next Zach Bryan?
That's, I mean, it's funny because that's maybe like it's as likely, maybe even tiny bit more likely,
okay.
frankly.
Right.
Yeah. Zach Bryan is also someone not getting out over his skis
sure.
in any way. You know, this is the fourth Zach Bryan show I've seen.
In a year and a half?
Yeah, and like, yeah, 1.5, 2 years.
Sure.
Yes, in summer 22. They are all pretty similar. The thing is,
rollicking.
Yes, the crowd at a Zach Bryan show, and I talked about this, I was talking to Karen during the edit of the piece.
Of your review.
Yeah, of the review. And Karen was like, yeah, but sing-alongs, like everybody has sing-alongs. It's not a big deal. And I'm just like, it's not the same. Like, it's hard to convey. I tried to convey in words, but it's like a little bit difficult to convey the earnestness and intensity and almost like physical vividness of a sing-along in a Zach Bryan show.
It's bar band. It's a bar band in stadium
18,000 people.
Yeah, arena style.
And so the thing about Zach Bryan, he's very, very good at, is cultivating that intimacy, which he's been doing for 2+ years at this point, convincing every single person that they are the one singing to him. And I will say the crowd has expanded. Like when I saw him in 22, very bro heavy.
Big very tall boy energy.
Yes. Very bro heavy.
Which is funny, of course, given the emotional complexity and devastation of the songs.
But that to me was the most striking thing, because I've been to plenty of shows that are very bro heavy, but not singing along.
Right. Like,
not,
it would be like Dashboard being bros.
That, right. That's exactly correct. But this go around, I was like, oh, there's teenage girls here. There's families here. There's older folks. But very young folks, like a lot of people, like very clearly between
extremely popular.
This is what I'm saying. Like a lot of people between like, let's say 15 and 21. And that to me, I'm looking, I'm like, oh, you are. I mean, I don't mean this pejoratively, but it's like, you're a pop star.
Yeah.
Like you're a pop star.
You think those are radio fans? Like, are they there for the Casey song? You got the Casey song.
We definitely got the Casey with Casey.
Right. I saw the reaction to her play that. That was huge. It's a little bit jam band. Like, does he still do the 10-minute jam outro?
Yes, the jam outro. I was very, very struck again by that level of fan devotion and also his understanding of not pushing beyond that. Now, that said, when you think about Springsteen and Springsteen growing into a stadium act in the 80s, even someone, frankly, like Ed Sheeran growing into a stadium act from an arena act, there are going to have to be like tiny compromises here and there. And I wonder, like, there's still a real interior energy about Zach Bryan. And he's kind of like, I'm I'm going through this. Mm-hmm. And obviously I'm doing it in this intimate way that still connects, but I do feel there's going to have to be some stage concession. He is going to have to run around. He is going to have to do a tiny bit of what Olivia is starting to do. Like, there is going to be.
Oh, you think he's going to do a wall in, like running down the catwalk thing, taking off the jacket?
Absolutely.
Bruce.
Yes. So to me, that's what's obviously next for him. Like, I think he probably, his next tour is stadium tours. I mean, it's 3 nights sold out in Chicago, multiple nights in New York coming, multiple nights in LA. I think he probably is going to end up doing a stadium tour next year or the year after. But I don't think you stay at one side of the stadium. Like, I think he's going to do the thing. And if there was like a trial balloon for that, it's that the stage in the was in the round. I mean, it's just on the floor. Four corners. And he was so meticulous.
Right, about hitting every corner.
Every single song. Verse, a little bit of the chorus, back off, walk to the next point. Verse, a little bit of the chorus, back off, walk to the next point. And did that methodically every single song. So it's like you already understand how to work at scale, but your body's not doing anything. All you're doing is walking. There is a 2.0 or 3.0 of this where it's going to get bigger and more ambitious. And frankly, I think it has to, because he may be running out of runway, to, no pun intended, but just to do this. There has to be like, how do we make this an explosion? Not simply an immersive, like we're all in the tank with him, but how do you make it an explosion? That seems like the next thing.
Wow.
I'm ready. Speaking of explosions, do you have any for Songs of the Week?
This is not an explosion.
Okay.
This is...
mine also is not an explosion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is an artist that I'm historically hot and cold on.
Okay.
But who I think is at a really interesting point in his career. Young Lean.
Yes.
Swedish rapper. Many children.
Oh, yeah.
Grandchildren at this point.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, elder statesman of...
Seeds upon seeds.
Yeah, of a certain kind of gauzy internet rap. I don't know, like, whatever you want to call it.
Sure.
Been pretty quiet, popping up here and there over the last few years. But put out a song... basically just on YouTube and SoundCloud, I think, called Shadowboxing.
Cardi Core.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah.
Like, you know, not doing a full streaming rollout, I think, is really the move right
now.
That's
the new thing.
Yeah, like, just putting something here and there, like, reminds me of, even back in the day, like, Migos' return to form was putting Bad and Bougie on SoundCloud only and letting it bubble from there.
Mm-hmm.
In the video, he does as a guy who's setting a lot of trends. He's like mid haircut. So he has like a inverse mullet, like just the middle of the head shaved with hair on either side. I'm like, we're going to see.
Yeah. Can't wait.
Somebody more famous doing that quite soon. A lot of darkness. Like, he's alluding to some tragedy in his life that's become very central, I think, to the Young Lean lore, which again, I'm not totally tuned in on because I'm not an obsessive like most
Young fans
are, and everything that came after. But I thought this video and the song were a cool direction, and I'm interested in what he does with his sort of like godfather status.
Do you think he's going to do anything with his godfather status? Because I do think one thing about Young Lean is there does seem to be a reluctance on his part to do very much with his sort of like, I could do any, like you think, like, I mean, I could do anything. Didn't he do, was he with Ye?
There's photos of him with Ye. He popped up on the Travis Scott album on Utopia. You know, it's like, he had that cool record with FKA Twigs. Like, he's just, I think he's being very selective with it. It reminds me of someone like King Cruel, who like was this huge cult figure, but didn't sort of take all of the doors available to them and has been very selective with the way they spend their clout. So that's this Shadowboxing Young Lean. I really take whenever prescription. Tried to stop a couple times, but it comes back again. Pictures come up in my head, I can't be left with them. Try to block out what I've seen and see the joy in it. It's all a game, Lee, remember what you always said. The same words I hear you said, it's all in my head. Was it a fight against time or was it predestined? Also not an explosion. But I want to talk about Yahya Bey for a minute. Okay.
Yahya Bey is a soul singer working in a mode that feels it's indebted to like what I would think of as like down tempo, like 1.0 neo, like neo soul before it got codified, like real like Fort Greene early to mid 90s energy. Yaya Bey has a very soothing vocal tone. There is a new single. It's called Sir Princess Bad Bitch. There's an album that Yaya Bey put out a couple years ago. I'm pretty sure it was her debut. It's called Remember Your North Star. And more than a lot of R&B records recently, you really hear a specificity in the tone. It's incredibly consistent, smooth, relaxed, but not reluctant. It's not, it's somehow like very, very calm, but like not in the cut at all. It's not back here. It's extremely like out front, but it doesn't have this kind of like force of dominance. I think it's a really impressive feat to pull off. Before we play the new song, I do want to say Yaya Bey's father is a rapper. Granddaddy IU was signed to Cold Chillin' in the 90s, maybe in the late 80s, early 90s. Can we play a little Granddaddy IU before we play the Yaya Bey song?
It's never before said on podcast.
Yeah.
Somehow.
Let's play something new. This is an old Granddaddy IU song. It's extremely good.
Here it is, a world premiere, crystal clear in your ear, so listen here. Yeah, it's something new, but I ain't no new kid, so don't fool yourself with garbage that you did. Ain't nothing changed, so don't act strange. I'll chew through your crew, so get out my range, cause I'm calling shots while I make my appearance. No interruptions, no interference.
Now that you see where it's coming from, this is Sir Princess Bad Bitch.
Great title.
Yeah. Which one of us is which?
Depends on the day.
Depends on the Sir Princess Bad. Could go either way.
The beautiful thing about me is every little beautiful thing is on its way to me. Me wouldn't ever rather be. Wouldn't ever rather be.
Shall we get to snacks?
We got rare.
Extremely
exotics.
Rare. I feel like the next few weeks, like I brought some stuff back.
Yeah, we re-upped.
Yeah, like the pantry is thick again.
Snack of the week getting extreme.
Yes. But these.
I got Girl Scout cookies coming also.
I've been wondering if we should deal
with
that.
We'll do a little.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
These come from Sawyer. Sawyer was in Brazil.
Yes.
And brought back. I have seen some alt flavor Snickers. They're actually sitting in my refrigerator because I keep forgetting to bring them in.
Okay.
I don't know if it's these.
I don't think you get these stateside.
I don't think. Yeah. So we've got two. This is passion fruit and lime.
Two separate Snickers.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
A passion fruit Snickers.
And a lime.
Where are you at on Snickers regular?
Honestly, it is probably my number one soothing candy bar.
Okay.
It's a candy bar that I will occasionally mistake for health food.
So sick.
I'm sorry. It is, I know, not to be like the ad where it's just like, damn, it really sad. Like, you don't want to be like that.
Yeah.
But there are certain moments that I have where I'm in between meals and I feel like I need something that is sweet but also substantive.
This is literally the ad campaign.
I'm sorry, but it literally scratches that itch for me.
The marketing works.
No, I invented the marketing.
You're the Don Draper.
I live the marketing. I'm sorry. It's actually
not
solves the problem.
Spawn.
No, not spot. It literally solves the problem of a snack that is both sweet and also sustaining.
But it's not good for you.
It's not good. But it's like what? Like every energy bar.
Sure.
It's literally, how much worse is it than the average energy bar that you buy at like a health food store?
That's above my pay grade. Which one are you going to try
do
first?
Do the math. I'm going to start with limão.
All right, I'm with you.
Mousse de limão, because I think I probably will like this less than
the passion fruit.
Yeah.
Okay. I can't imagine. I'm not a lime flavor guy in general.
No, me neither.
I can't imagine it going.
Not even in a starry.
Chocolate.
Not even in a star.
I've not had starry. All right. Cheers. All right, cheers. Lime Snickers from Brazil.
It smells like a Snickers.
Mm.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Wouldn't have guessed that.
Who knew?
Yeah. Wow. They really get the brightness.
Mm-hmm.
And I also don't terribly enjoy lime flavor, but this is an interesting deployment of it.
Citrus, chocolate, like, you know, the the orange thing that breaks, you know.
I don't like those.
Yeah, but incorporated in a similar way, the sort of essence of citrus. You know what this reminds me of? It's like, you ever get a box of chocolates?
Yes.
Like a Godiva.
Okay.
Like a box. And so you eat all the good ones. Yeah. You know, you eat like the salted caramel, whatever, like the go-tos. Mm-hmm. And then like there's like four left and they sit around for like 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And then eventually you eat them and you're like, huh, not as bad as I thought.
Yeah.
That's what the lime Snickers is like.
Okay, let's try the second one, then we'll do scores after.
All right. Passion fruit.
Mousse de maracuja.
You eat passion fruit as a fruit?
No.
Only as a flavor.
Oh, this one you can smell. Uh-huh. Wow. Also, you really, I couldn't smell the lime off that, but this really,
wow,
this really hits. Wow, I haven't even tasted it yet, but I can taste it.
Mm.
I mean, no.
Mm. Too sweet and perfumey, the passion fruit.
I mean,
it tastes like Bath and Body Works.
It is fragrant AF.
Right? It tastes like bath bomb.
Weirdly, the smell is more intense than the taste, I think.
Mm-hmm. But the combination of the two is too much. Whereas the lime is weirdly subtle.
Yeah. No, I agree with
this
that.
This is like OD.
But I like this, though. I like both.
Shocking.
No one's more surprised than me.
I'm going 4 on the passion fruit, 7 on the lime.
I'm going 6 on the passion fruit. I'm going 8 on the lime.
Wow.
I think the lime, like, I'm advocating for the lime to be put into general release.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Absolutely.
All right.
Unbelievable.
Really interesting. If you can get your hands on rare Snickers,
yeah,
go nuts with the fruit flavors.
Innovations. Shout out to the food scientists.
Yeah, always.
That is our show. Every podcast ever is at nytimes.com/podcast. I'm sorry, I meant to say every iHeart podcast award-winning podcast is at nytimes.
What was the submission window? Do we know what episodes? Is that calendar year?
You were definitely on some of that.
Okay.
Yeah. nytimes.com/podcast. Subscribe to us, youtube.com/podcast. Press the button. Do something.
Like and subscribe and comment.
Like and subscribe. Also,
the comments are always amazing.
We have a Zazzle store.
You have a Zazzle store.
A Zazzle store exists. There are mugs or other things. Also, it's the podcast on myshopify.com is where the stickers are. tinyurl.com/podcast Discord, podcast Facebook. Shout out to everybody who helps us moderate those, keeps folks engaged. Email us. We're going to have a mailbag pretty soon, podcast@nytimes.com. Our senior producer is Sawyer Roque. Our editor is Jamie Heffitz, remote this week. In the room with us is Pat Gunther. Special thanks to Karen Gans, Nell Galogli, Pedro Rosado, Leslie Davis, Nina Lossom. We'll be back next week.